E aí, gente, tudo bem? Aqui quem fala é Alexandre Murra, do arroba nixnation_br. E antes do episódio de hoje, tenho dois recadinhos rápidos para vocês. Primeiro, que esse episódio vai ser um pouco diferente. Ele é um episódio de entrevista. Eu vou bater um papo com o Jonathan Macri, do Nixium School, um podcast, site, Twitter, muito bacana do Nix. Então, o episódio vai ser em inglês, a gravação vai ser em inglês, a nossa conversa. Para quem não se sentir confortável, não gostar de ouvir, eu vou traduzir a entrevista e colocar para vocês em forma de texto, provavelmente no fim de semana. Para todo mundo que quiser ter acesso ao conteúdo, vai conseguir ter acesso. E o segundo recadinho rápido é que agora eu fiz uma parceria com a Suit Up Imports, que se você estiver querendo um produto da NFL, da NBA, de qualquer jersey que você estiver procurando, eles têm, com qualidade, um preço muito bacana. E com o cupom NixNationBR você consegue 10% de desconto em qualquer produto, tá bom? Vamos lá para o episódio? Aproveitem!
Hello everyone and welcome to the new episode of Radio Nix. This is your host Alexandre Mucher and today with me is the one and only Jonathan Macri. Hello Jonathan, welcome to Radio Nix.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. I know it's has not been the best basketball so far this year, but I'm always happy to, you know, talk about this team. So, yeah, thanks for having me.
John, for those who just woke up from a coma, please tell them who you are and what about your project called Nixum School.
Sure, yeah. So my name is Jonathan Macri, as you said. I run the, well, we're a website. We have a newsletter. I have a podcast, all under the Nix Film School umbrella. And let's see, I've been writing and talking about the Nix for a few years now. And I just, yeah, I really love it. I'm just someone who's been a fan of the team for basically my whole life and kind of got some more time over the last few years and was like, hey, why don't I turn that passion into something a little bit more productive? So that's why I do what I do. And that's basically all there is to it.
Have you ever wondered what is going to be your life if the Knicks just, I don't know, start being good?
Oh my God.
You don't have to write every day.
I don't dwell on that. I don't even think about it because let me preface this by saying I don't like doom and gloom Knicks fans. It's part of the reason I do what I do because I tend to try to look on the optimistic side of things. So it's kind of funny that my answer to your question is like, I refuse to get my hopes up. My comfort level is like back against the wall, like defending this team against all the people who are trying to like say that they can't get out of their own way. And that's what I'm used to. You know, it's like being a prisoner of war. Eventually you just look for your bread and water and you move on to the next day. It is what it is.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do if the Knicks are good. I've been in a relationship since I am 15, and my girlfriend always asked me, why your team is always the worst? Why? Why?
I wish we knew.
Well, the NBA season is finally here. It was a long period, and we still don't know what kind of team we are. We just know we suck. During the preseason, we watch a terrible perimeter defense and static offense to go along with, I don't know how to say it, but that, let's just say weird rotations. After just 8 games, the team has shown that we shouldn't be hopeless after all. There was some improvement, but there is a very long way to go. What are your thoughts on this season, and what do you think is most likely scenario to happen?
So my thoughts on the season so far are, I didn't expect to be 1-7. Had asked me what my most likely outcome, it probably would have been like, you know, 2-6, maybe 3-5. But I definitely thought that they would struggle early on because with so many new pieces and with so many of those pieces being younger players, and then you throw in a couple of the injuries, you know, it's a lot. That said, I think that it's not too early to start making some judgments about how the players on this roster maybe are not being used in the best way possible. And it seems like the way that they are trying to go about like winning basketball games right now, which is to kind of have a more stagnant offense with the starting lineup going through Julius Randle, to not have a whole lot of shooting in that starting lineup. I think it's pretty clear that it's not working. And I think that there may be some solutions, but I don't know if this team, if this coach is willing to go to those solutions. And then as far as like my outlook for the rest of the season, I mean, at this point, they would be really, really lucky to even sniff 30 wins. I predicted, I think, 33 before the season started. That is looking now wildly optimistic. But that said, I did say all along, and I still agree with the fact that I don't know exactly how we're going to get there, but I think this team plays a lot, will win more games in the second half of the year than in the first half of the year, whether they do it under a different coach or with some guys that are not on the roster that are here right now. I'm not sure. But I do think that the season will get better towards the second half. So I'll just say that.
This first 8 games, it was a pretty rough schedule, right? Pistons, we faced the Celtics twice. I don't know. Maybe the future will be brighter for us.
Maybe. I mean, they do have some winnable games coming up in the next week, so I'll say that.
I just have to expect that they're going to trade everyone when we have the December 15 arriving.
You know, I don't think that they are going to trade. I don't think it's going to be like a mass exodus of just getting everybody out of here. I think Morris, I mean, is the guy that everybody has kind of assumed would be the most likely trade candidate. And I think that makes a lot of sense because he's someone that can certainly help a really good team. I know he hasn't shot the ball well at all this year, and that's been part of the reason why they've been struggling. But Wayne Ellington, I still think, is a piece that could probably help a team as well. Other than those two guys, though, I'm not really sure who any other team is going to be like dying to get their hands on, other than maybe a guy or two that I don't want to trade. So, yeah, I would say Morris and Ellington.
I just have this feeling that they're going to trade Bob Portis for, I don't know, Portland or some other contender who needs a big who can shoot.
Portland definitely, I mean, with the Collins injury, they need someone, right? And Portland is funny because they have shown themselves able to take players that have, like, not fit in perfectly elsewhere. I mean, look, they did it with Kanter. They're doing it now with Hassan Whiteside, although, you know, they've struggled a bit to start the year. Even Yusuf Nurkic. Like, Nurkic was not, you know, like, Denver got rid of him. He would have... Like, he was arguably Portland's second-best player last year before he broke his leg. So they have a history of this. So I would imagine Portland is probably the most likely trade candidate for one of those guys. Maybe it's Portis. Who knows?
You talked about a little bit, but we have been a really bad offense so far. How much do you think goes on the coaching staff? How much is it in the players?
I think... So I actually just earlier tonight, which is part of the reason that I got so jammed up on my schedule this evening. I recorded a podcast with Dallas Amico of Posting and Toasting, who is really excellent and does great film analysis of the Knicks, and he's just really smart. And he made the observation, and it's a really good one, that if you look at the second unit, right, of the Knicks, the second unit has actually been running some really, really, really nice actions this year. They've been moving the ball a lot. They've been moving without the ball. They're doing all kinds of stuff with screens. Obviously, that second unit has some pretty good spacing with Kevin Knox and Wayne Ellington. Taj Gibson's an excellent screener. Bobby Portis is an excellent screener. Like, there's not the most talent in the world on that second unit, but it's a pretty brand of basketball. And there's a reason why they have, when the second unit comes in, a lot of the times, things go well. On the first unit, they're short on shooting, and they're going through Julius Randle on offense. And for a lot of reasons, and if anybody's interested, you could listen to my podcast that'll be out on Friday morning. Julius Randle is just not the type of guy who can be an offensive, like, fulcrum, like the centerpiece of an offense, unless he has certain things around him to make his life easier. And the Knicks are just not in a position to put those things around him because, you know, you want R.J. Barrett in the starting lineup. You want Mitchell Robinson in the starting lineup. You know, and right now you want Frank Ntilikina in the starting lineup because he's obviously Yeah, we love Frank because he's your best defender, and he's actually hitting some shots now. So I think there are some – there's absolutely blame that goes on the coaching staff, but I think it's not because they could be doing more with the pieces that are there right now in the way that they're there. I think it's that they could be moving some of the pieces around to make life easier for everyone. I just don't know if they have the, let's say, the gumption or the willpower to make some of the necessary adjustments that are going to need to be made.
Well, I just hope when Peyton gets back, he can help Julius Randle improve his game. It's been really terrible for him so far. And he was really good with Peyton back in New Orleans. I just hope they can find his groove back.
Yeah, no, for sure. And Peyton's numbers early in the season were very good. He definitely gets in the lane, and I think he will add another component. But, I mean, since you brought up Peyton, you know, it gets into an interesting issue, right? It's like, if Peyton's back, does he go back into the starting lineup? Or should Frank stay there? And based on Frank's play so far, I think absolutely Frank should stay. So it then raises the question, well, can you bring Julius Randle off the bench? And that's what I was kind of referring to before. I just don't know that this coaching staff, or frankly, this organization, has what it takes to go look at the guy who you just signed for $63 million and say, you're going to be our sixth man.
Yeah, they're never going to do that.
Yeah, no, they're not. And it's unfortunate because I think that really might be the best solution for what ails them.
The new hot word in the NBA right now is culture, and media members yell that the Knicks doesn't have one, and they are just a mess. At the same time that they say Knicks doesn't have a culture, they love to say the Nets are the best example of that. It's just weird, because they just traded 23-year-old All-Star for Durant, and just signed a point guard who is famous for ruining chemistry of any good team. Do you think that if it was the Knicks who did this move, they would be celebrated, or the media would be criticizing them?
Oh, that's a great question. So basically you're saying if the Knicks got Durant and Kyrie this summer, how would they be perceived? I think they would be celebrated, but I think that they would be celebrated in a very different way than the Nets would be celebrated. I think the Nets, there was this like celebration that culture won out, and it was all the better because the media got to rub it in the faces of James Dolan, who, you know, it's no secret that the media doesn't care for. And quite frankly, nor should they. He makes their lives very difficult. If the Knicks got these guys, I think there would be a lot of, it would have been basically like, okay, good job. You did what you set out to do. Now show us that it could actually work. And I think that there would be a lot of like, all right, well, let's see. Let's wait for the other shoe to drop. You know, and it honestly, it would have been interesting had that happened. I mean, putting aside how just rough it's been to watch this team thus far this year, I could get excited watching RJ Barrett and Mitchell Robinson and Frank Ntilikina and Kevin Knox, even if the team is losing and it does not look good doing it. I don't know that I would have ever be able to get truly excited to watch Kyrie Irving just because he's just not... not my type of guy, but that's just me.
I totally agree with you. I would hate that.
Yeah, I mean, it's no crime in saying that.
From a New Yorker, is it still a Knicks town?
Oh, yeah. I mean, but, you know, that goes two ways, right? It's a Knicks town in that there are still way, way, way more people that are talking about the Knicks and that care about the Knicks than care about the Nets. Like, the idea that there are going to be people who have, like, genuinely rooted for the Knicks their whole life that, like, the Knicks are off to a 1-7 start. I'm going to go root for the Nets now. That, like, that's not how it works. Like, you don't do that. I mean, there are people that I'm sure were kind of, like, apathetic about that. Not apathetic, but casual fans that like would watch the Knicks sometimes and would watch the Knicks sometimes, but they wouldn't really have any allegiance. Like, yeah, sure. Maybe those people are paying a lot more attention to the Nets this year. Quite frankly, as they should. The Nets are playing a better brand of basketball. But the amount of conversation about the Knicks and the amount of that people are invested in the Knicks and care so much about the Knicks, even when they're losing, maybe especially when they're losing, if I'm being honest, like that is unrivaled. And all you have to do to realize that is to just, you know, go on Twitter the night of a loss, like, or today even, And it's, you know, it's crazy the amount of conversation. Again, it's not all positive. Much of it is kind of sky is falling. Like it's never going to be good. Like the minute things start to go bad. But again, you know, how can you blame people when you've kind of been, I want to say almost like conditioned to believe that, you know, things are not going to get any easier or better.
I just believe if people were going to give up on the Knicks, they should have been doing this before.
I could never do it if I tried, so I wouldn't know, but yeah, I'm sure.
Well, we have this idea that the front office is trying to bring the 90s back, but we have played terrible so far. We're not taking care of the ball. We are not protecting home court. We are not leaving our heart out there. What does it take to bring the 90s back? And should we pursue that? Or should this team go out there and try to find who they are and not trying to be someone else?
That's actually, I mean, it's a simple question. It's a simple answer in that, like, no, the 90s are gone. It's almost literally a different sport in terms of the rule changes, you know, in terms of the way things are litigated, in terms of like fouls and whatnot. It's not recognizable. And so much that team's success, I mean, don't get me wrong, they had just incredibly, incredibly skilled basketball players that were very, 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 very good. But you also had a coach like Pat Riley, you know, getting basically all-star level play out of like undrafted guys like Anthony Mason and John Starks. So to think that was ever going to come back. Now, the idea of taking pride in like defense and like defending your home court, like, yeah, those are things the 90s Knicks did, but there are also things a lot of other really good teams have done over the last 25 years too. So from that perspective, like, sure, great. You want to bring back the 90s Knicks. Like, and that leads to the second part of your question, which is like, should they be trying to find their own identity? And I think honestly, that's the thing that people have had the biggest issue with. It's not the losing. It's the fact that, and I, you know, they had this offseason and I'm like, okay, they brought in very particular guys that have very particular skill sets. It doesn't seem like it's going to fit. And it seems like it's going to take a lot of work to get the pieces in the right place. But clearly they have a plan. They must have a plan to have brought in these particular guys in the first 24 to 48 hours of free agency that they see this working as a unit together. And not only has that not happened, it looks like that is not even on the verge of happening. Not every night, but on some portions of some nights. Now, as I say that, I also have to acknowledge the fact that there have been stretches of time this year where they have actually played very good basketball on both ends of the court. So it's not happening at all. And I don't think it's happening by accident. But to echo something I said earlier, I don't think that the way they are going about trying to win games right now is sustainable. And I don't think it is the way that is making the best use of the talent on this team, let's say.
I just hope someone gets by Marcus Morey and say, hey, you're not supposed to hit other players with the ball. You just need to play hard.
I don't know if anyone's telling him that, but that would be a good thing to say.
Moving on from another great player to another great player, we have seen the French Prince play his best when the team is running some plays instead just playing freely out there. He was great against the Bulls. He was fantastic last night. But many fans don't believe he can be a starter on the NBA. I truly believe he is. I truly believe he's good. He can help a contender to win. He's a smart player. And I know for a fact you are a Frank believer, as I am. You are probably, let me say, the third, number three on Frank's scale. I am number one. His mom's
I was about
two.
To say, who's ahead of me? If you're putting yourself ahead of me, that's fine. I'll forgive that.
Yeah, I truly believe he's a good player, but they have already moved on from him. And do you think it's too soon for the Knicks to start to check the prospects for the next draft? It's a loaded class with point guards, or can we still believe Frank can lead his offense?
Oh goodness. Okay, that's a complicated question for me to answer because I think that Frank Ntilikina can be the starting point guard on a very good offense in the NBA in 2019 and 2020 and 2021 and moving forward. But I don't, from what we have seen from this particular coach, and I guess even more to the point, this particular regime, right? The Perry, Mills, Fizz regime, is they don't seem set on playing or running the type of system that Frank Ntilikina would be best suited to be a starting point guard in. He is so smart, right? And he does all of the little things well. And it seems like maybe finally the jump shot is coming around. If anybody wants to watch like a clinic on how you're supposed to play defense in the NBA, just turn on last night's game and literally just watch the entire first half. And I can't think of five possessions in the first half last night against Detroit where Frank wasn't absolutely 100% making his presence fully known on the defensive end, even if it didn't equate to a steal or a block. And he got a bunch of blocks, and I think he had one steal. But he's just, he knows where to be. He does all the little things so many players just don't care about doing at all. More to the point, he can guard the other team's like most dangerous like guard. And I think at some point, once he pulls on a little bit more weight on his frame, he could probably guard the opposing team's best wing as well. That player type is so incredibly valuable. And there are so many teams in the NBA that would just like, they would figure out a way to make him fit in like for 30 minutes a night, right? I don't think you could have him be the point guard without another, let me say, initiator, like primary initiator, primary ball handler somewhere on the offense. I think in time, once he gets a little bit more polished, RJ Barrett and Frank Ntilikina could make absolutely beautiful music together if you put the two of them out there with like one really good like dive man who could like, once Mitch like starts actually setting screens, you know, Mitchell Robinson, and then like two shooters and you're set, right? Like that's an offense. That is a modern NBA offense in 2019. I don't know if this coach and this front office see it that way. And I wonder, you know, it's a crazy question to ask, but I wonder who's going to last longer, Frank or, you know, like, or Fizdale and like, I guess Perry and like the other guys up there. We'll see, but I'm still a believer in Frank. I mean, he's so good. How could you watch the guy and not think he's good? He's awesome.
I know you're a guy who likes to bet. Who you bet's gonna be the longest snake? Coach Fizdale or Frank Ntilikina?
I mean, at this rate, I think it'd be, I mean, if you were to bet on David Fizdale still being here a year from right now, I mean, I'm not saying that I think this is the right move, but I would be surprised. So, and they picked up Frank's option, right? So he's a Nick, not only for, he's a Nick for next year as well, under contract. Man, if they traded him after how he's played and how he's come along so far, I think it wouldn't break me because nothing would break me. I will always root for this team. I will always love this team. But my God, with that would be just the gut punch of all gut punches.
Well, talking about weird guy the Knicks traded last season, our next game is going to be against the Mavs. That tall, white, weird dude broke our hearts, and we should be ready to move on. But hoping RJ dunks on him tomorrow, is it too much to ask for the kid?
I think it might be a little bit too much. I mean, RJ, he has blown away every expectation that like anybody should have had for him, and I'm so excited to watch him, and I'm so excited to, you know, I hope he can see past the clouds that are kind of over this team right now and have seemingly been over this team for a lot of years. But I feel like he has what it takes to be a guy who can like bear the burden of playing in the city, you know. And we thought KP was that guy too. And you know, we're all lying if we say now like, oh no, we didn't think that. Yes, we did think that. Yeah. He was an imperfect player, and I was having some discussions on Twitter today about like if things were like rosy between him and the team, would we still wanted to have given him a fully guaranteed max contract, even with the injury situation and either with some of the other concerns about his game and now knowing what we know about some of the off the court stuff, which we don't need to get into, you know, it's a valid question. I'm happy they did not decide to basically commit themselves to him for 4 or 5 years. I don't think it would have been the right move for the organization. And I think RJ is obviously a different type of player than Porzingis, doesn't have that kind of otherworldly potential. But I also don't think it's out of the question to say that Barrett will wind up having a more successful career than KP. It's a matter of to a certain extent, what the Knicks do to support him. And that is going to be the biggest question that this organization has to answer, you know, for the rest of the season and beyond.
I bet they would have offered him the max if he wanted to stay. The full max. I'm pretty confident they would do that. I'm not saying they would be the right move, but I just have this feeling they would throw him the money.
Maybe we'll hear the full story of KP someday. Your guess is as good as mine, man. Nobody really knows.
Is it just me or the trade just looks worse every day that goes by?
Of course it looks bad because he's a 7'3" guy who can hit, who has 30-foot range and like block shots, and he's a really smart player. And he now gets to play with, you know, Luka, this generation's LeBron James. Luka Doncic is going to, like, he'll win an MVP, at least one, at some point in his career. Like, that's, you could,
for sure,
you could write that down. So if Kristaps Porzingis is on the court and playing especially with a guy like Doncic, like, yeah, he's going to look awesome. Like, that's not, even though the numbers for him in Dallas thus far have not been great, and even though I do think there are some very, very legitimate concerns about his game and just how he is on the court, and maybe, you know, those go away with time, and obviously he's still rusty right now, but even all of that being said, the guy's a monster, and he's going to be a monster probably for as long as he's healthy, even with those deficiencies. But I always come back to the same thing, which is that if this organization truly was essentially like broken, right? If they were broken, mm-hmm, and they needed to like gut out everything, like do a complete gut renovation,
over,
right? Yeah. Start over with a new, whatever word you want to use, culture, mentality, pick your term, right? How can you, other than by like firing everybody who's employed by the organization, which we know that was never going to happen, right? So other than that, what other way was there to go than to get rid of the guy who clearly was not like a believer in what you were trying to do? Would he have stayed if they offered him the max? Maybe, right? Maybe, because he loved New York, clearly, very much so. He loved the spotlight. He loved the marketing opportunities that were going to come with it. Like, all of that is 100% true. Does it mean it would have been in the best interest of the organization to tie themselves in to him and his personality and commitment or lack thereof to actually making this a better organization? You know, I'm sorry, I can't see that. And this, and just the one final thing I'll say on that is not to say that the Knicks are without blame. God knows the Knicks are always deserving of a good heaping of blame for letting the relationship deteriorate to begin with and for not doing enough to repair it. And, you know, for obviously continuing to this day to have issues putting one foot in front of the other. But I just don't think that would have been a step forward. So it ultimately comes down to what they got from the trade. And then that gets into a whole host of other issues with, well, what did they know at the time? What other offers are on the table? But yeah, that's why this is a trade we'll be talking about for the next, you know, 10, 15 years, probably, when all said and done.
Well, John, I would like to ask you about the most amazing part of Knicks Film School: helping those in need. Is it something you and JB talked when you were conceiving this project as a building block of Knicks Film School, or it happened and you embrace it?
We actually, I'll never forget it. I was in, so I'm a teacher also, in addition to doing all this stuff for the Knicks. I was in classroom 209 in my school. I literally remember this like it was yesterday. It was like right before the summertime. And this was a year and a half ago, I guess now. And I called JB and I'm like, yeah, you know, I want to, you know, I want to do like a podcast or something. And then he's like, yeah, you know, I want to take the website up to like the next level. And like, that was like the first conversation we had about joining up. And in that first conversation, we both agreed like, yeah, you know, maybe some money will come from this someday if it gets really big. But for right now, we should just make an effort that whatever little bit that we can generate, if we could generate anything, let's just give it to charity because, you know, we're both very lucky. He has a nice secure job. I have a nice secure job. You know, it was less important to us than we knew it would be to other people. And then once like we kind of committed to that, it was amazing how many other Knicks fans in like the Knicks fan community, because it is a community. Once they heard like what we were doing, people just wanted to be a part of it, and people continue to want to be a part of it to this day, which is truly inspiring. And, you know, we have an event that we're doing here in New York. We're doing a game watch for the next KP game when he comes back to MSG next Thursday. And a portion of the proceeds from that bar night are going to be going to help feed, you know, needy New York City families on Thanksgiving. And then that'll kick off our Thanksgiving drive. And it's just, you know, it's something we're always going to continue to do as long as we exist, because people want to help others. And if they could like help others while doing something that they enjoy or being a part of something that they enjoy, you know, it's just, it makes all that much.
That is fantastic. It's really awesome what you guys do.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Do we still have time for a quick lightning round?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Let's go for it.
Just three questions. What's going to be RJ future? Solid starter or all-star?
Oh, all-star. I think he's going to be a multi-time all-star. I think the only question is whether he gets to like the all-NBA level. And I would say 50-50 that he makes an all-NBA team, which is probably like much lower chances than most Knicks fans have it at right now. But I would just remind everybody that it's really, 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 really freaking hard to make an all-NBA team. So just for what it's worth.
I wasn't that high on him when they drafted him. I really thought he's going to be terrible on defense. He's been okay.
He's been their probably their third best defensive player after Frank, and maybe I'm trying to think of like another, like Taj has been okay. Marcus Morris has been okay.
Marcus Morris.
You know, Mitch, when he's been on the court, obviously he's been good, but his defense has shocked me. But more than that, he just, like, you draft an RJ Barrett because you believe that his feel for the game will overcome the physical deficits that he has. And I don't mean to say physical deficits like it's a bad thing. Like, the guy obviously can still do a lot of special things on a basketball court, but like, he can't jump out of the gym. He's not dunking over guys like we've seen him try to do already. He doesn't have like blow by speed. Like, he can't do any of those things. And yet he has that feel, right? And that just sense of what's going on the court and like where to put the ball and when to do it. And it's just really special to watch. And I'm happy he's a Knick.
What about Mitchell Robinson? He's been, I don't want to be rough on the kid, but he's been not good this season so far. He has some foul troubles. What do you think about him?
I'm incredibly high on Mitch. I still remain incredibly high on Mitch. I think he's a great kid. I know he's a great kid, and he wants this so badly. He wants to be great. He really wants to be great. I think this year for him has just really, he's been trying to figure some stuff out. I mean, he's had some really nice moments. I know the foul trouble has been there, but I actually think that's one thing that I would like to see a little bit more from the coaching staff, and I would like to see a little bit more from the organization in terms of, you have a true, like, I know RJ is RJ and his special abilities and talents are very obvious. I think Mitch in a lot of ways is just as special in terms of how uniquely he can impact a game, not only on defense, but his ability to like just his gravitational pull on offense. And I know he has areas to clean up severely. Like he doesn't set a screen to save his life. And that's something that I don't know if that's on him. I don't know if that's on the coaching staff, but make more of an effort to make life easier for him. He is as big a part of your future as RJ Barrett. And I would like to see them do that more. And I don't know if he's being maybe thrown off from the fact that, like, for the last 3 months in New York, it was Mitchell Robinson is everything, is the only reason to watch this team. And now all of a sudden it's, well, we got RJ Barrett over here and we got Julius Randle. And, you know, Marcus Morris needs to get his, and they got the point guard situation. It's like, if Mitch was looking around and he's like, well, you know, what's going on here? I wouldn't blame him, because again, the organization needs to prioritize his development. And I'm not talking about like playing him a certain amount of minutes. I don't really care how many minutes they play him, as long as it's like, you know, a reasonable amount, 22, 24, 25, whatever, but just, you know, make sure he knows that he is the guy. And or one of the two or three main guys. And hopefully we get more of that, because again, like, I know you're saying like he's had a rough start. Kid's 21 years old, right? He was so raw last year, and we got so spoiled by how quickly all of this came to him. And he's a hard worker too. That's the other part of it. Like, some guys you have to question that. You don't have to question how hard Mitchell Robinson works. So yeah. Anyway, sorry, these aren't much of lightning round questions when I go on and talk for 5 minutes. So my apologies. You had one more, I think.
Yeah, but don't get me wrong. I really love Mitch. I think he's going to be our center for the future, but I'm just...
I hope so.
Worried. Final one. Did Fizdale found the best role for Kevin Knox? Can he be more than a scoring guy coming from the bench?
Kevin Knox is funny, right? Because I think he has one of the prettiest jump shots I've ever seen. I think he could do real stuff on offense other than just shoot it. And he has, like, I think at some point in his career, he has it in him to not be a terrible defender. We have seen instances of him being something other than a terrible defender this season. They haven't come that often, but they're there if you want to look for them. So for me with Kevin Knox right now, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Like, he seems to be thriving off the bench. I almost don't want to mess with that, but at the same time, he is the most dangerous shooter this team has right now, and they have a starting lineup that is just absolutely desperate for shooting. You know, and Ellington's in a slump right now, and you know, I don't know. I'm okay with him coming off the bench, though, I guess is the long and the short of it for right now.
John, I really want to thank you one more time for being part of this. It's been really good talking to you.
Thank you, man. This was, this was a lot of fun. I'm always up for talking hoops. And it's funny because, like, I say this to people when I'm a guest on their podcast. I talk about stuff when I'm a guest on a pod that I don't talk about on my own, just because, like, I don't think about it. Or when I'm on my own podcast, I'm just worried about, like, you know, getting the right questions out, or, like, making sure I get, you know, my guests that to give them, like, give all their points. So I love coming on to other people's pods to talk hoops. I really appreciate you having me on, and yeah, man, I hope they start winning some games here and there, you know, to make the season a little bit more palatable.
And I just hope they beat the Mavericks.
Oh, I'm god, okay. Yes, please, if they go 2-80, just let one of the wins be against Dallas, please.
One more time, thank you, bye bye everybody.
Esse podcast foi editado por Hector Souza.